You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 599.5, a very special episode. We are here with one of the greatest band, one of the greatest new supergroups there is. We are here with Doki Doki, which I learned last week is an onomatopoeia for the Japanese version of the beating of the heart. We're here with Lucy and Randy. Lucy and Randy, is it true that Doki Doki is named after the Japanese version of the heart beating? Is that correct?
That's what they tell me. So I'm going to say yes.
All right, well, fair enough. I've known Lucy about 12 years, and the first time I ever met Lucy is she was 10 years old, and I interviewed her in the crepe shop in Santa Cruz, and it was Dog Party, the Avengers, and Kepi, I think, or maybe it was Dog Party, the Avengers, and Dan Andre, the guy from Crab Ragoon. What's his name?
Dan P.
So it was one of those groups. And that's when Lucy was 10 and her sister was 12. And I've been following Dog Party ever since. They've just been getting better and better. And now, both Lucy and Randy of the More Band, I'm newer to the More Band, but Randy is also in the Adam Age sometimes. He's in Dan Andreano's band sometimes. He's in a new band called The Spirit World, which might be named after the Ceremony song, or maybe he's named after the Police's song. Who knows? At any rate, we've got some people with some great pedigree here. So why don't the two of you tell us how Doki Doki came together, because it is a super group of Asian man style bands, supergroups, top the cream of the creme de la creme of Asian man, the young wave of stars. How did Doki Doki come together?
You want me to take it, Lucy?
Yeah.
Okay. So Doki Doki started because I work at Asian Man, and Mike and I were talking about doing a new project, and I've known like Donnie from Grumpster forever. I've known Logan of Small Crush forever. And I've known Lucy the least amount of time than everybody. But we were just talking about getting together a bunch of people and just seeing what happens. And we just found a window of time for everybody where they had nothing going on. It was like right after the holidays earlier this year. And we just started messing around, kicking back some material back and forth. And then the album happened, so it's cool.
Okay, so I know a single came out already, but you guys have already recorded an album. When are we shooting for that to come out? When's that going to come out?
I have no idea. it's kind of Mike Park is putting it out, obviously, because everybody on Asian Man, but he's kind of taking the reins about the release and stuff, so just kind of following his lead.
How hands-on is Mike Park? You know, some record labels, they'll be like, all right, this is going to come out on November 27. You're going to wear suits in the promo picture. And some record labels, like Alternative Tentacles, Joe's like, hand it in. So how domineering, how precise is Mike Park?
I think Mike obviously wants the artists to be artists and express themselves and do what they want to do. He'll try to like give suggestions, and we'll be like, no, that's stupid. And then we'll just continue on with what we're doing. But no, Mike is the coolest man I've ever met in the music industry. And he is just so cool and so kind. And he's just the best guy.
What I really dug about the initial lead track that you guys put out called I Was Killing It, Man, is it had kind of a hardcore vibe. Is Doki Doki a hardcore band? What kind of band is Doki Doki?
Lucy, you take this one.
Yeah, I would say that Doki Doki is just a punk band, like a rock and roll band. I think that we are just channeling just channeling the pure emotion that I think a lot of the songs were written about. That was my goal anyways for the record. And there's actually kind of a cool array of different sounding songs that are on the record. So there's, a couple other songs that sound kind of like the one that was just released, but then there's also even some more mellow songs. So
The music video has you guys flying around in the back of a van jamming while the van is driving at high speeds. What was it like doing an incredibly dangerous music video? Did you feel like you were in danger?
It was really fun. We actually were driving at very low speeds within a very mellow neighborhood. So it, I think it looks a lot more chaotic than it was, but it was a whole lot of fun for all of us.
Hallie Bullitt, you, go ahead.
I was just going to, I said, I have a stunt double. It's actually not.
Hallie,
I was going to say that's some real movie magic. It did look like it, right. I mean, it didn't look like you were like, I don't think it looked as dangerous as John's maybe implying, but I wouldn't have thought you guys were like moseying your way around the neighborhood. It looked exciting.
I did have bruises though afterwards.
Oh man.
I mean, I was so focused on trying to listen to the track and trying to have it all synced up that I didn't realize how I was actually getting tossed around a bit, but yeah.
That's punk.
I told my friend Natalia, who was directing it, I was like, make it look like the Bourne Identity. She was like, okay. So she's like shaking everywhere and trying to make it seem like it's crazier than it actually is.
It worked.
What are some of the themes that you guys explore on the album? Is it a happy album, a sad album, in between? What are some of the things you're contemplating on the new record?
I feel like the record is really fueled by a lot of new emotions that, you know, had risen up through the pandemic and just this intense global change, not only the change globally, but also individually from person to person. There's a lot of just emotions that everyone's been feeling. There's been isolation. There's also been, you know, community and love. But yeah, there are themes of, you know, sadness, but also themes of togetherness on the record, which is quite cool.
You mentioned isolation, and I'm very interested in your opinion. This is kind of an abstract question. I complain to Hallie Bullitt a lot. Whenever I need to complain, I send Hallie Bullitt an email, say, Hallie Bullitt, I'm involved in shenanigans again, and Hallie Bullitt humors me, and then I'm sure she turns off her cell phone and says, oh my God, this guy again. But anyway, here's my point. I like to call people on the cell phone or the phone, because then you can kind of have a full conversation and kind of get where someone is at. I find that with the emails and with the text message, when you text someone or email them, the full birth of the conversation is lost. And then you're having kind of this conversation where you're expressing one thing, but the other person is reading something totally different. And then when you're trying to get a certain answer or something, it totally just gets all tied up and washed away. And burn away. Is that because I'm old, or is that because technology is destroying the world? You tell me, because you're both young people, and I'm, you know, marching off to my grave any week now with my walker and my wheelchair and my iron lung. You tell me, what's the state of technology and communication?
Yeah, I think a lot of what you just said was pretty valid. I feel like when the form of communication is written down, you can really perceive it in a way that it wasn't intended to be perceived, and there's a lot of your own imagination because you're the one that's consuming it, whereas if you have a conversation where you're actually exchanging real words with one another, you can hear inflection and tone, and you can maybe take things differently than visually consuming them.
Do you think we're beyond the tipping point, and will communication continue to degrade, or will people, I guess, adapt to the new surroundings and find a way around this block, if you will, or loss of meaning in digital communication?
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I feel like now there's so many different ways people can communicate, and now with like what we're doing here on the Zoom, we can like see each other too, and there's also like little voice messages you can send to people. So I think there's a lot of ways to work around misunderstanding someone through written text. What do you think, Randy?
I think texting is the worst form of communication. You're trying to tell somebody something important. I think texting is kind of like passing notes in class. Like, you just kind of like, when you get to it, you respond, you know. But if you want to the way around this interpreting of text message is just calling somebody and having a real conversation. And there's been a couple times when I've been trying to work with somebody and I've just stopped texting and called them, like, this is going to be way easier if I just talk to you right now.
I like what Lucy mentioned. Oh, sorry, John. I love a good voice memo, because to me, a voice memo can sometimes be the best of both worlds, because especially if I'm talking about something that's like a little sensitive, sometimes in person, shit's going to like fly out of your mouth that you didn't have time to think about. And what I like about sometimes texting about important stuff is that you have the time to like really formulate what exactly it is that you want to say. And so what I love about a voice memo is you kind of get both, right? If you screw up the voice memo and you say something that's inflammatory, you didn't really like, didn't come out the right way, you just erase it and you re-record it. But then the person can still kind of hear your inflections and it's not as much. Anyhow, I'm a fan of the voice memo.
Yeah, that's a real good take.
Randy, I see you got a bunch of records behind you. What are some of the crown jewels in your collection?
A lot of Alkaline Trio. A lot of Alkaline Trio.
The listeners can't see this, but it looks like Randy's got at least 5 Alkaline Trio posters behind him.
Don't tell Dan. Whatever you do, don't tell Dan.
Well, Randy, you play in a band with Dan. What's it like playing in a band with someone that you were a big fan of before you knew them? I mean, sometimes it's a bummer. I mean, the trail of music history is littered with someone being a fan of someone for 20 years. Then they work with the person. The person is a total asshole or is totally insane. What's it like working with someone that you admired as a musician before you ever actually worked with them?
He is the meanest person I've ever met. No, Dan Andriano is the nicest guy. It was awesome. I did a record with him in February of 2021. It just came out February 2022 this year. But he flew to San Jose and me and my brother did the record with him, the Dan Andriano on the Bygones record. And he's just like such a pro and such a good songwriter, and just like seeing him in his cue zone and just like working and just putting his like nose to the grind is just like so cool to see. And he was like cared what I had to say, and we like worked together. And the tour we just did, like Derek was playing drums, so I got to like watch Derek every night, and that was amazing. It was cool. They allowed me to geek out in like little increments of time. So they were the nicest.
I know that Lucy is a big time 50s and 60s record collector, and Lucy's been killing it as a DJ. Lucy, I DJed for the first time ever about 4 weeks ago, and I had all these obscure records. I'm like, oh, I'm going to blow everybody's mind. And I got up there and I'm like, oh my God, this crowd just wants Rock the Casbah. So I just did hit after hit after hit. Mm-hmm. What should I do as an EJ? Should I educate the people? Should I take risks? Or should I just give them the mega jam? What should I do?
It is definitely a fine line you have to walk, because a lot of the times I'm wanting to play more obscure stuff. But a lot of people they're not moved by it. If they are not hearing things that they're familiar with, they just find it maybe less engaging. So there's a formula you can follow. You can do like songs in groups of 4 or 5, and you can do like 3 well-known songs, then you mix in a more obscure song every once in a while just to, you know, have the fun. And I mean, I love going to see DJs spin, and what I'm there is really to hear all the stuff that I haven't heard and like to see what they have that I either don't have and want, or don't have and never heard. So but there are a lot of people that just want to hear hits. But I think a good DJ is one that also introduces more obscure stuff. That's what keeps it fun and interesting.
60s and 50s records, 7 inches, can be ultra expensive. Do you collect the heavy hitters or just the cheapies?
Yeah, so I collect a lot of country. And at this current point in time, you can still find country 45s for fairly cheap, which I'm thankful for. There's a lot of rockabilly records that I really want that are way expensive that I can't afford. And then there is one subgenre of country music that I really love, and it's called dark twang. And those are extremely expensive as well. But you can just, you know, I spend a lot of time picking around and digging through bins. Whenever I'm on tour, I try to find a record store in whichever town I'm in. And I love seeing a huge bin of unsorted miscellaneous 45s so that I can go and dig, because there are some, you know, gems in there. There's always going to be a gem. So I found some stuff that's pretty cool out on the road. And I'm thankful that I get to go out and go to so many record stores.
Who's the country person that we don't know that we should all check out?
That you guys don't know? I think that a really awesome kind of forgotten country artist is Sanford Clark. A lot of people don't know who he is, and Lee Hazlewood produced him, and he's got a lot of cool songs.
So changing gears, what in Doki Doki, like, does everyone get along? Do you guys all hate each other? Like the Ramones? What's the creative dynamic in the band? Is one person like the boss and everyone else like just does whatever they say? Are you guys a democracy? Or are you guys a what do you call it when everyone has to agree on everything? It's not a democracy, whatever that is. What are you guys? What is Doki Doki?
I think that everyone in Doki Doki gets along extremely well. It was actually one of my first times meeting Logan. We had played some shows together like a very long time ago when me and her were both super young, like at Gilman. So I didn't really know her. So I was a little bit nervous to work with her just because I didn't know. But then when we like got in the room and we were playing, I was like, oh, this is so great. Like everyone's like super chill and super nice. And then Donnie and I had just gone on tour with Anti-Flag. So we had spent over a month with each other hanging out. And so it was actually really unique and cool to work with Donnie as well, because I realized that, like, wow, everyone in this group is just so talented. And it was so cool to play with, you know, my peers. I feel like I started playing music when I was so young, and I was always the young one. And I would play with people who were much older than me. But it was super cool to actually play with people that were in my same age group. And just everyone was, you know, so good. And it was a lot of fun.
Well, I'm going to ask you one last question about that, then I'm going to throw it to Em. I'm sure Em's got a question or two, because I know Em and I are, I should have said when we started, is, listen, people, we're going to play it at the end of the segment, but the new single by Doki Doki, I Was Killing It, Man, it is cool. It's real cool. I dig this band. I've been a fan of a lot of the people in the band for a while, and it's cool. I mean, honestly, most supergroups suck. I mean, I'm a huge Rolling Stones fan, but Mick Jagger's got the supergroup called Super Heavy. It's him, Dave Stewart, the guy from Game of Thrones, and like someone else and Damian Marley, and it's terrible. However, Doki Doki is freaking awesome. And so everyone should check him out. I'm very excited for the album. But Lucy, let me ask you this question. I'm going to throw it over to Em. I ask this question, I'm a big Kepi fan, and anytime anyone has a Kepi connection, I always ask this question. I'm a huge Kepi fan. I think he's one of the great songwriters of the 90s and the 2000s, an amazing songwriter. And I said, oh, I should do a Kepi interview once. So I interviewed Kepi. I'm like, so Kepi, like, you know, how are you feeling? He's like, life is great. Hooray. Ha ha. And then I'm like, oh, I'm like, well, I'm like, what's moving you these days? And he's like, I love having fun, rock and roll. And I'm like, is Kepi really Kepi, the guy on stage all the time? Or is there a different person underneath that skin?
No, yeah, Kepi is so awesome, and he's always so lively and fun. I've spent a lot of time with him. I've toured all across the country. I've toured Europe with him multiple times. So I've spent a lot of time with that man, and I can tell you that music is his life's passion, and he strives to create and just have fun every day, and he does. So I think that more people should be like Kepi.
I feel like there's like a great profile piece there, like behind the eyes of Kepi. Like, I feel like I swear I was going to throw it to Em. Am I wrong? I feel Kepi is an incredibly complex person, sort of like Brian Wilson. I mean, not in mannerisms or mentality, but I feel like he's very complex, like Brian Wilson or Daniel Johnston. Am I right? Or is everything right there on the front page?
Yeah. I mean, everyone's human. And I feel like he's someone that I really look up to, and I've always looked up to him very much. And whenever I don't know, I'm in a rut, I always like to think to Kepi and how he is so active and musically productive in his life, and seeks to, you know, always have a great time and have fun doing it. So, yeah.
Well said. And more, hit him with a question.
How is the songwriting process and the creative process different in Doki Doki than in the rest of your bands or bands you have been in?
I feel like we had nothing to start with. And I feel like in all my other bands, we kind of have material to work with first. So with Doki Doki, we just kind of got in the studio and then it just kind of happened. Ryan Paris, who owns and operates District Recording, had a big part of the production and say of the songwriting also. So shout out to Ryan.
I'll ask a question. Hi, guys. I'm like so excited for this album to come out. And it's like, at least this single sounds significantly different to me in style from any of the members' other bands. So I like that it seems like when you guys got together, you sort of just discovered like a new way that you wanted to, make music, which I think is really cool. I don't, what did I want to ask you? Oh, I know in I was always a Small Crush fan, and it was funny because I was playing all of your bands in the car today while I was like getting ready to talk to you guys, and it was cool just to play some of the other bands, and like Grumpster came on and my husband was like, oh, I love this band, and then it's cool. You guys have like a very cool background. I know in Small Crush, they used to sometimes change instruments up. Do you guys have any, are you guys have the ability or any plan to do anything like that?
That would be cool.
Yeah, I think that we could definitely have the ability since a handful of people in this group can play different instruments.
Yeah.
Lucy's a great guitar player. A lot of people.
Oh, nice.
Great guitar player.
Yeah, you got to
check it out. And Randy is a very great drummer as well.
All right, listen.
Rips on the drums.
I'm taking credit when you guys decide to play musical chairs. I'm taking credit. Right. And then I don't know. It seems like you guys have all been involved in that scene for a long time. Like, is there anybody you guys are listening to that we should all know about? Is there like anybody else from your guys' scene that you're excited about?
Our friends in Sarcasm. I was just in the studio with them. If you haven't checked out Sarcasm, they're a great East Bay punk band.
I have. Great people.
Sarcasm with a CH. I think nice. That's different. Yeah, but Sarcasm's mm-hmm. great. I don't know. It's been such a long time since I've been like a part of the like live music community since the pandemic, you know? I feel like it's still slowly coming back. I feel like a lot of bands that I've been playing with are like bands that existed before the pandemic. So I haven't really seen a whole lot of like new bands come out of the pandemic. I feel like I'm responsible for most of them with like the more Sarcasm is the one that comes off the top of my head. Lucy, do you have any?
Yeah, I was actually thinking Sarcasm as well.
Nice. And do you guys think are you noticing like, sorry, I should know the answer to this. Have you guys been playing live? Have you guys been playing live shows?
Yeah.
Yeah. And do you feel like, is there something cool about playing after a pandemic? Do you feel like an extra excitement or enthusiasm from people in when they come to see you play now?
I feel like it's almost like more appreciative.
Yeah.
I don't want to speak for anybody else, but I feel like, I think we took for granted just like touring musicians. I mean, this is a whole other debate, but taking for granted of seeing a band live and like going to a show and like hanging out with your friends. I think we all kind of like just took that for granted a little bit. And then once mm-hmm. that was like taken away, going out is such a more of an event now, and seeing people, you kind of cherish it a little bit more personally. That's kind of how
I feel like it's a mixture though too, because there's still a lot of uncertainty and a lot of kind of like fear about going out in public and gathering for some people. So I do think it is like this very interesting mix of really enthusiastic people who like haven't been out and they just want to go out and see music again, and some people are a bit more timid about it for sure.
Yeah.
Well, listen, people.
Glad to be doing it.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Listen, people, Doki Doki is awesome. I'm super psyched for the album. Any closing words, Doki Doki, for the listeners? Anything you want them to know? Anything you want them to contemplate? Anything you want them to be scared of? Now is your time to speak and inform the populace.
I'm scared of the Supreme Court right now.
Oh man, yeah. Randy bringing on the heavy conversation. I thought they were gonna be like, you should be scared of Grimace or Ron McDonald. Like, Randy's like, the Supreme Court dismantling American rights. Like, damn, oh. Randy, damn.
Oh, yeah, but aren't we all thinking it?
Yeah, we love McDonald's. Grimace rocks.
No, Grimace, yeah, for Supreme Court justice.
Yeah, he's probably got better takes than people in there right now.
I think so.
Do you guys think the hamburger, like, originally I think the hamburger was supposed to represent like selfishness and being bad, but in the current Robin Hood mentality that we find ourselves in, where giant corporations are claiming record profits despite the fact that everyone else is suffering major price hikes, can the hamburglar be now seen as a heroic figure fighting against, you know, corrupt gigantic powers? Should we salute the hamburglar?
I think the Hamburglar's misunderstood. I think he's got a story to tell and nobody wants to listen.
So you're saying that the Hamburglar, like, is a commentary on systematic injustice, and that he's not bad. It's the system that has made him bad, and he could have been a more productive member of McDonaldland had the system in place been more equality in the McDonaldland system.
Yeah, the hamburger's grammar. He's kind of got like a Joker kind of feel to him, you know, like he's just a product of his environment, you know. Like,
oh, so you think he's like fundamentally cracked?
I don't know. The whole story. Where's Hollywood? Yeah. This needs to be a movie.
I do feel like, John, yeah, I'm pretty sure this is the second time you've asked us to like to wax philosophical about the hamburger on this on this podcast. Hamburger.
Even something to contemplate for sure.
Well, it's a good time to talk that we are now being sponsored by McDonald's. So go to McDonald's this week, 2-for-1 chicken McNuggets, French
McDonald's
fries.
I'm loving it.
I'm loving it. After their connection to R. Kelly with their slogan, they're looking to rebrand themselves for sure. So you guys know R. Kelly wrote the "I'm loving it" slogan, right? You guys know that?
I thought that was Justin Timberlake.
Damn, you're right.
No. No, hold on a second. I listened to a whole podcast about this. There were two guys from like Norway who wrote the jingle, and then like the whole thing was, I love that this is what the podcast has become, is talking about the McDonald's jingle. So
not even remotely the most random thing we've ever talked about.
So I think that they wanted that jingle to be in an already popular song, so they tried to get like Timbaland or Justin Timberlake or something like that to record the song with that jingle in it. But I think Justin Timberlake is the one. But then I also heard that like somebody else sang it and then got paid a crazy amount of money.
See, I think it was like R. Kelly or one of the other like soul R&B guys, I think.
I feel like it's like a less problematic man.
Mm-mm. It's hard to find a more problematic man than an R guy. But listen,
sorry. But are you talking about the da-da-da-da-da? Is there, you talking about that?
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
It took two people to write that?
Oh,
like two people write that.
They said they were just like slamming their head against the wall trying to come up with something, and then they came up with that, like,
it's like 10 notes.
Hey. Yeah, you remember it, though.
Good point.
Lucy, last question. You're stranded on a desert island. You have to be there for 10 years with one member of McDonaldland. Who are you on the island with? And Randy, I'm going to ask you after that. So you've got a little bit more time to think about who you're going to be stranded on an island with McDonald. So Lucy, you got Ronald, you got Grimace, you got the bird. I think the name is Polly of the bird. You got the little fry guys. You got Hamburglar, Mayor McCheese. Who are you going to be on McDonaldland Island with?
The little chicken nugget
guy. The little fry guy.
You don't think they'd be like annoying though, because they're always talking and like running around and stuff, you know? Like sometimes you just want to chill and they're trying to get French fries or something, you know?
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Well, listen, I'm not trying to push you out of your decision. Fry guys, that's Lucy's answer. Fry guys, yeah. Fair enough. Randy, let's wrap this on up with a very important question. We were talking about the Supreme Court, and now it doesn't look good for me that we were actually having a very serious conversation about something important within the realm of punk rock, and I started like basically prostituting myself for the world's biggest fast food giant. At any rate, Randy, this is where
you're
we're
part
at.
Of the problem, John Gentile.
I am, Randy, I'm part of the problem. Who are you going to stuck on the island with from McDonald's land?
I feel like the Hamburglar, the hero of our story, is I feel like he has kind of got like a MacGyver quality to him, and he can probably makeshift a lot of stuff. He's, you know, cunning and whatnot. Mayor McCheese is probably just corrupt like every other politician. So I don't know if I want to spend any time with him. Ronald seems like kind of a narcissist. Grimace, I feel like he's not gonna, he's more of like a down, he's kind of like the Eeyore of the group, right? That's kind of like his thing. So I think I'm going hamburger. The point is
good choice. And plus, like maybe his desire for hamburgers will make him find a way to help you get off the island so he can go get more hamburgers. You
know, or turn into a cannibal.
Well, there you have it. Murder and cannibalism here on the Punk News Podcast. Doki Doki, thanks for coming on the show. It's been a lot of fun to have you guys on. We're very excited for the new album. And let's play their only single right now, but stay tuned. This is I Was Killing It Man by Doki Doki, out sometime soon-ish on Asian Man Records.
Thank you so much.
I think maybe the listeners might think I'm on LSD or something, or that I am a corporate chill. You know what I mean?
We're all punks. Everyone in the punk scene is a weirdo. I don't think there's much you can throw at punks that's going to like really, like, they're going to be like, what? Right? And we're all a bunch of misfits talking about weird shit.
And more talking about chicken nugget. The listeners can't see that, but it looks like, is it a fireman chicken nugget?
No, it's a McDonald's like worker chicken nugget.
But I mean, think about
the
that.
Hat comes off.
Think the about that. They sell chicken nuggets for you to eat at McDonald's. So this guy is working at McDonald's, setting his friends in deep oil to sell to the customer to eat. I mean, that's a pretty ghoulish character, I gotta say, man. Pretty, and he's got a smile on his face, you know.
So. Loving it.
Yeah, I'm loving it, guys. Well, listen, it's the Punk News Podcast. We're gonna hit you with about 3 or 4 stories or so. And actually, I just remembered we didn't go over them beforehand, decide which ones we want to keep and toss. So it's going to be fast and loose. And the reason things are going to be fast and loose is because I am ultra busy, because Punk News Summer Soiree 5 is in 2 days, Saturday. Come on out. Joe Jack Talbot.
Cha-cha.
Marissa Paternoster. Vixen 77. Froggy. And At Night. And I think M and Hallie are somewhat privy to some of my machinations, but people, it is going to be crazy. So come on out. It's going to be a good time. And oh, also WXPN is going to be there taking pictures. Magnet Magazine is going to be there taking pictures. And all the local celebrities will be in town. So be sure to come on out. That's Philomoka, Saturday, July 2, $12. See you there. Anyway, let's talk about the news. I noticed that Doki Doki did not want to stick around for the news, which is cool. And like, it can be awkward for bands to stick around in the news because as part of the Punk News podcast, we say, oh, I love this track. But sometimes we say, oh, I hated this track. Or sometimes we say, these two people are lunatics that deserve each other. And no wonder they're always fighting. They want to fight. So it can be hard for musicians to stay on the podcast because sometimes they don't want to say bad stuff about people that they know. Billy Joe Armstrong was in the news, and he had a story that blew up. And I think it might be Much Ado About Nothing. Billy Joe Armstrong was on the news, in the news, on stage, playing a live show. And he said, F America, I'm effing renouncing my citizenship. I'm effing coming here. Oh, I guess he was in Italy. Where was he?
He was in the UK.
There's just too much effing stupid in the world to go back to that miserable effing excuse for a country. Oh, I'm not kidding. You're going to get a lot of me in the coming days. And he was talking, of course, he was talking about the Roe v. Wade reversal. I guess technically it's not a reversal. Technically, it's a reversal is where there's a judgment and a higher court changes the judgment, where this is the same level of court changing the judgment or the decision. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. There's definitely a war for that, but I can't think of the top of my head because honestly, rarely do I argue in front of the U.S. Federal Supreme Court. You know, I mean, you know,
I think the official word for it is bullshit. bullshit.
True that. Yes. So people were dogging on Billy Joe Armstrong. They were like, Billy, you know, well, they were like, Billy, what you say doesn't mean anything, and you're kind of a jackass and blah, blah, blah. And I got to say, man, like, I'm usually beating up Green Day, but here I got to stick up for Billy J because, first of all, if he's not political, people are like, Billy, why are you being political? And then if he is political, people are like, shut up, stop being political, you know? And I realize that he probably isn't planning on moving out of America, although I do know some punk rockers that actually did move out of America. But what I would say is, an artist has to be free to speak their mind and heart on stage. And I don't think Billy was backstage and says, I'll say this thing that isn't true, and that way it'll get me in the news. I think he was just on stage and he just kind of spouted it out, and maybe he meant it, maybe he didn't. I don't think he actually did. I don't think he really thought it through. I think he was just speaking loosely on stage. And, you know, I'm usually in favor of, like, if a band says something on stage that's kind of not cool or kind of weird or stand-up comedian, well, listen, it's live, it's in the moment. It wasn't thought out. If we want to have creative and expressive art, sometimes people have missteps. And I'm not saying that his statement was a misstep, but what I'm saying is I think he was speaking loosely, and I don't think you can take this quote as him saying, this is what I've sat down and thought about and believed, and I don't think you can nail him for not going through with it or whatever if he doesn't. I just think it was the thought he had in the moment in his creative space, and I think that's one of the main points of art and seeing things live. Hallie Bullitt, Billy Joe taking some hard hits in the comment section. Deserved or not deserved?
Yeah, I don't know what people's problem is. It's like we were all receiving shocking, horrifying news and all trying to process it in whatever way we could. And when you're a performer and you're on a mic, some of that processing is happening in front of people. And I don't really I'm not offended or shocked by anything he said. I think a lot of people in this country were like, what is the path forward for me living here if this is the direction the country is going in? And I had that thought, and I love where I live and I love my house, and I stuff like this starts happening, and I have to imagine, okay, like how bad does it have to get for me to give up what I love and just go live in a country that isn't in complete, just free fall, total fucking chaotic free fall, you know? So I don't understand the commenters. I don't think he was really saying anything so different from what a lot of people were. I mean, we were all having a lot of reactions that day, some knee jerk reactions, some very deep and thoughtful reactions. And I don't see what the big deal is. Pretty jealous that you're kind of looking in at this from the outside.
Yeah.
I don't know. What is it like to be in another country seeing what's happening here?
It's really scary. Cause the things that circulate are, you know, like obviously you see what happens. When I saw the news, I was really, really angry and started to cry and stuff, because it can happen. Like, that's the thing. Yes. Nothing's safe. Like, nothing is protected, and things that should be protected and things that shouldn't even be thought of to be reversed, you know, like, this is going to kill so many people. So with Canada, with Canadian politics, especially, I'm in Ontario, and Ontario right now, we have a conservative premier who's a piece of shit. Mm. And one of the big things that was circulating after was a list of anti-choice MPs who are currently sitting in the House. Mm. And the majority of them, unsurprisingly, are conservatives. Our MP for this area is an anti-choice MP. There's a lot of legislation that is on the table and some that has been passed that is limiting certain people's access to things. And they think they can get away with it because we're living through a global pandemic and there's a lot of other shit going on. So we're going to try to slip these things through. So it's really scary. And it's one of those things that we can't just say, oh, well, I'm not in America currently. I'm not an American, but it still affects me and it still affects people around me, and it can easily happen here. It can easily happen anywhere, and that's a really, really scary thing. Yeah. So that's something that we can't lose sight of, and it just has to strengthen your resolve to like fight for it, to make sure that, okay, we can't rely on the government to protect us. We can't rely on the government to save us. It's in the hands of the community, really. Yeah. So that was the other thing. Just, there's a lot of community groups that are out there to help people that I think deserve a huge boost too. So it's a horrible situation, and it's something that never should have happened. It's ridiculous, and I don't know. It's just, there's a lot.
So when Billy Joe is like, I don't fucking want to live in America anymore. I'm going to live in Europe. I mean, I feel like part of what some people there, again, we're all having knee-jerk reactions all day on Friday. And I think John, tell me if I'm right. I feel like some of the criticism or the bulk of it that I saw was like, well, you're rich, so you have that option. And a lot of us don't, right? Wasn't that kind of what a lot of, and I understand that sentiment, but also, you know, I don't know.
Is that the most important attack right now?
Yeah. So I don't know. So Em, what was your take? What was your take on the Billy Joe thing?
Yeah, I just saw it. He's really angry. That's it. He's really, really angry, and he should be. And why shouldn't he?
Yeah.
And he has the platform, and that's what he said. I don't know if he's serious or not. It's hard to tell. But obviously the anger is real and the outrage is real. It's interesting that he's like, yeah, I want to move to the UK when they have had some pretty restrictive laws too.
Yeah.
So there's a lot going on that way. But again, when he's like, you'll see more of me in the coming days because they're on tour in the UK. That's actually the first thing I thought of when he said that.
That's really funny.
And Moore does bring up a good point. I think it was the Russia-Ukraine conflict where they decided not to play Russia. And then he's like, but we'll be back because rock is ageless or something. You really need to be promoting your band in the middle of Russia becoming the evil empire again and trying to conquer a country with no cause whatsoever. At any rate, so I guess that does, you know, read as bad in people's minds. I don't know. Billy gets beat up a lot. Some of it's deserved, but I just think he was speaking off the top of his mind. And I think the core of his statement was kind of accurate, or at least heartfelt. So I don't think he should have gotten beat up here, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, listen, if we're going to the comments section for nuance and thought out discussion, we're the ones that should get checked out. But listen, here's some good news. Off the greatest modern punk band is reissuing their first three albums, first 4 years, Off and Wasted Years. Those were originally released via Vice Records. I think Off 1 came out like 10 years ago now at this point. I don't think any of them are super hard to track down, but now they're back in print. And Off also stated that they are indeed working on a new album and a new movie with a new lineup. And basically Off is now moving back to full speed. And I think that's going to happen after the current Circle Jerks tour winds down. So if we think about seeing the Circle Jerks, I'd probably go see him because I think this might be the last one for a little while, to tell you the truth. So anyways, I don't know if there's a hope. I guess the only thing to say here, well, a couple of things to say. There's always stuff to say. One of the important things to say here is when Off came out, I think a lot of people thought it wasn't going to be that good because it's Keith. Well, that's cool, but Circle Jerks haven't put out, at that point in time, Circle Jerks haven't put out a good record for literally like 30 years or 25 years. Yeah, like, well, like 20 years. They're like 20 years. And the other guys in the band, Mario of Earthless, well, you know, Steve of Red Cross, like not that Red Cross hadn't had the resurgence yet, and Dimitri Coates of Burning Bride, like who? You know, and then they came out with this amazing band. I actually saw their second or third ever performance at the Sailor Jerry's documentary premiere in San Francisco, and they played 7 songs, and they were, as soon as I heard those songs, I knew it was awesome. And then they just jammed Stooges TVI because that's all they had, and it was just killer to see Off in their earliest stage, and I've seen them at least every phase since then. I guess what was notable is what was very interesting about Off is it sounded like Black Flag. It sounded like early Circle Jerks, but it didn't sound retro. It sounded pure and raw, and just proved yet again that Black Flag certainly wasn't all Greg Ginn, and that Keith Morris is definitely a big part of that magical combination. And really, Greg Ginn needs Keith Morris way more than Keith Morris needs Greg Ginn, because Keith is, you know, hit the brass ring 3 times in a row, which is pretty impressive. So I'm very excited for the new record to come out. I'm glad this stuff's getting reissued. And I guess notably the first 4 years. Oh, I'm going to tell a little anecdote. People get very confused about this. People think that the Off first 4 EPs were released individually. They never were. The plan was to release 1 EP every like 3 months or something. However, it got mucked up. So they released the first EP separately. Then EPs 2 through 4 were released as part of the box set and never released individually. People get confused about that, but that's the truth. Also, if you look at some of the very first Off tracks, Greg Hetson's name is, I think, credited on 2 of those, meaning they were originally intended for Circle Jerks, which is kind of cool. And it also shows that Greg Ginn probably – I'm not Greg Ginn. Did I say Greg Ginn? I meant Greg Hetson. Greg Hetson – those original Greg Hetson tracks, Greg Hetson would have almost likely had to definitely have to sign off on those tracks, because you can't release a cover unless it's been officially released by the artist that wrote it first without the permission. Hallie Bullet, are you excited for the Off reissues? Are you going to be running out to the Fat Opossum store and buying all 3 on day of release?
I'm probably not going to buy any of them. That being said, I like Off. I don't think I saw them as early on as you, but I'm really lucky that I saw Off like a few times back in the day. I'm not like enough of a fan that I'm going to like run out and buy these reissues, but I'm super, super happy they're happening. Why not? Like, why not? People love Off. Why not reissue this stuff? I think it's great. And now let me ask you, John, because I don't really know Vice Records. Who's Vice Records?
Vice Records was a subsidiary of Vice Magazine.
That's so nuts. I didn't know that. How did I not know that back in the day that they had a label?
If you recall, about 5 years ago, like Vice went like nuts, and they were like, "We're gonna have a TV station and an international news thing like that."
Yeah, that I remember.
And they all collapsed. That record label, I think, was the first testing the waters of that. That was like 5 or 6 years before that.
Yeah.
And then they put out stuff by like the Black Lips, and they threw like some shows. And then that was somewhat successful, and then they totally imploded. As a side note, one of Keith Morris's business-wise smartest ever moves was to sign with Vice. I'm not really a fan of Vice Magazine or whatever. I think you're kind of not, especially now. But especially since they were part of the founding of Foul Boys or one of the main guys.
Yeah, Vice, who gave you the fucking insurrection of January 6th.
Yeah. But putting that aside, is originally Off was supposed to come out on Epitaph Records, and Keith Morris had conversation with Greg Graffin that wait no no I'm sorry Mr. Brett Gerwitz of Epitaph. that they were going to put it out. But then somehow he contacted all Vice, or Vice contacted him, and he said, well, you know, if we put on Epitaph, we're just going to be the old guys on the punk label. And people are like, oh yeah, the old guys still got it. But if we put out on Vice Records, a hip label with the Black Lips and, you know, all those hip bands, King Kong and all those hip bands at the time, will be seen by a totally different audience. And he was exactly right. Hal, if you remember, if you went to those Vice shows, it wasn't the old punk dude at the show. It was the hip young people at the show.
Yeah, you know?
So I don't know. Even now labels do make a difference, but not as much as them, but they still do make a difference. And it just goes to show how much business is still in music. Well, I guess that's kind of a dumb statement. Everyone knows that, don't they? Well, anyway, how much business does control how artists perceived is maybe the wiser way to state that thought.
But I'm with you, John. It's not the way it was, you know?
Yeah.
It's definitely, you know, again, when people are streaming a single on a streaming service, they're just not, no one's holding artwork. No one's paying attention to what label shit came out on. So it's definitely a different world. It's still, sure, it still matters to some fans, and it definitely matters in terms of the inner industry machinations and stuff. But it's interesting to see how much that shifted.
But you also bring up another point that we've discussed quite a bit on the show before. This thread that I'm going to talk about goes all the way back to the 30s and 40s with subsidiary labels. Back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, record labels had subsidiary labels. Oh, this is our soul label. This is our funk label. This is our new artist label. This is our singer-songwriter label. And then starting in the 80s, and especially in the 90s, there was the idea of like a ghost label, like a label that actually is owned by a major, but you don't know that it's owned by a major. And now more than ever, especially in the hip hop world, you'll see these like one-off hip hop singles just explode with like literally like 700 million views on YouTube or 300 million views on YouTube. And it's like, wow, this is an independent hip hop guy that somehow has his super expensive video with Lamborghinis and stuff, when really, no, it's a major label. And there's much more that the people think. That one rapper that was just arrested after trying to escape on a jet ski that had like 700 million views from his first video. Like, he is a major label artist, even though he only has 3 quote digital singles out. And so that ghost has become even more of a ghost, and it's harder to discern, which is why I am so paranoid on the punk level when things appear to be operating in a way that seems slightly unnatural, you know, which I don't think is that big of a threat, but it's still good to be aware of that threat. Am I speaking too vaguely?
No. I'm just really, really hung up on the thing where someone tried to escape on a jet ski.
Well,
I'm real. In fact, I haven't really been able to listen to almost anything you said since then, because I've just been picturing that. And now I'm really mad that I don't live near an ocean, because I can't do that. But if I commit a crime, I might just have someone, I might mount a jet ski onto like a flatbed or something. And then that's how I'll escape.
Hallie, you know what crime you should commit?
What?
You should find Ronald McDonald and steal his hamburgers.
The new Hamburglar. Listen, Captain Marvel is a girl now. Why can't Hamburglar be like a middle-aged lady on a jet ski on a flatbed?
I'd watch that movie for sure.
Same.
And more. Off. Are you a fan or a hater?
I like Off. Off is great. I'm excited for the new album. I'm excited for the movie. Their Holier Than Thou cover was great. So I'm really excited for the new lineup too.
Now, wasn't the movie something they were trying to fundraise for and then it didn't happen? Yeah.
This is one of my probably two big, actually, here is John's two biggest annoyances in music's never happened. Number one, Flag forms and goes on tour and is amazing. Flag says, let's put out a live album. Greg Ginn sues them, thereby blocking a Flag live album from ever being released, which is my biggest annoyance in music never was is ever. My second big annoyance in music's never was Off did a fundraiser with the original Off, Keith, Steve McDonald, Dimitri, Mario, did a fundraiser for a movie called Watermelon. And they were only asking like $250,000, which for a movie is like nothing. You know, and so some of the things that you could get was like handwritten lyrics by Keith, $60. I'm like, wow, you know, so I bought the lyrics and I bought the movie and I bought it. I'm like, I can't wait. So it gets up to like 230,000 and there's like 5 days left. And also like, we only need $20,000 more. And it literally crapped out. I don't think It crapped out about $12,000 short on like $250,000, which was maddening. What was even more maddening is instead of doing the little button where funds, even if you don't make the goal, they left the button as doesn't fund if you don't make the goal. And thereby the original off fell apart right after that, which is so maddening. What's also maddening is like no one can come up with $12,000. I actually had the idea to say like the last couple of hours, I'm like, I'll do it myself, you know, but I'm like, no, that's insane, John. Don't do that. You know, and it was like, it's so frustrating that all they had to do, whoever did it, just funds, even if you don't make it. And the other frustrating thing for me is literally the same week the Harry Potter band did like a Kickstarter and they made like $1 million to sing about Harry Potter, which no offense to the Harry Potter band. I'm sure they're nice people, but I wanted to strangle every single one of them. It's like Harry Potter, the band is getting funded $1 million and Keith Moore, the greatest punk singer ever, can't get $250,000 to make a movie and send me handwritten lyrics.
Ugh. Oh, it is a pretty sorry state of affairs. Sad.
Well, listen, here's something. Here's another interesting collab. A band called Boyfriend have teamed up with Big Frida, a singer on the New Orleans bounce music circuit, to cover La Tigra's Decepticon. The track is on their upcoming album Sugar and Spice, and it's out September 9. And more. Are you a fan of Boyfriend? Are you a big fan of La Tigra? Are you a big fan of Big Frida?
I had not heard of Boyfriend before this. But I want to check more out by them, so I'm excited. Big Frida, John, you showed me her world, and big fan. And La Tigra rules. So I love this because Beyonce just released a new song that samples Big Frida. And then
that's
I was thinking.
Awesome. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I'll send it to you. Yeah. One minute. So yeah, when that came, I was like, oh my God, like, you know, so like John, I sent it to you. And I was thinking like, she needs to do a punk thing. Like there needs to be like some sort of thing. And then a couple days later, this comes out and I'm like, this is the best.
You think so, you summoned it?
I think so. I think my powers, are reawakening. but yeah, like the cover is great. The cover is Decepticon and it's so, so good. So like any point where the kind of robot voice comes in the original, it's Big Frida yelling and it's perfect. It's really upbeat. It's become my new like pump up song and it's my cover so far of 2021 or 2022. Good Lord. It's 2022, folks. Yeah. Hallie, what did you think of
it? I liked it. I mean, this is a really hard song to cover, right, you guys? I mean, the original is so untouchable. And I'm like a big, big Frida fan. I didn't know Boyfriend, right? Boyfriend was the other artist?
Boyfriend.
Just because of Big Frida's involvement, I was expecting it to be a little bit more fun than it is. So I don't know if my expectations were a little bit off. I feel like I need to listen to it another couple times, but but yeah, Big Frida covering La Tigre, that's something I didn't even know to wish for. But it's pretty fun. John, were you into this?
I thought it was cool. I thought it was cool. I do agree that like Big Frida has some tracks where she just goes like absolutely insane. So I was hoping for a little bit more of that like La Tigre bounce music insanity, like on that killer single. You guys have seen the video for Excuse by Big Frida, right? Where they're in the yoga studio or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. If the listeners haven't checked out that video, it's one of the greatest videos. Anyways, I thought it was cool. I wonder if Big Frida knows about punk. I never got the impression that Big Frida knows about punk reading Big Frida's interviews, but maybe not. But you don't have to know about punk to like cover it, which is cool. You know what I mean? Clash is definitely a core to punk and especially La Tigre. And so I think it's a cool mashup and it's a good idea and a pretty cool execution. Let's do one last story. Do you guys want to do Stud Count or The Interrupters? What do you guys want to do?
Stud Count. Sorry.
Stud Count. All right.
So I didn't mean to steal that. Em, do you have a vote?
I'm good with that.
Okay.
Em, tell us about Stud Count.
Stud Count are a Philadelphia based.
They are?
Yeah, they're in Philadelphia.
You just say, how do you get out more? It looks like.
Come on, John.
I'm pretty sure they're out of Philadelphia.
I'm just saying. I'm still like, oh man, like you know, Ruin, such a great band, or Ink and Dagger. They're like, John, that band broke up in 1996. Like, ah. Go ahead, Emily.
That's not true. We know about so many good new Philly bands because of you, John.
That's
like
true.
All the ones you talked about for cool new bands.
Indeed.
So they're like a melodic indie punk band, and they're really cool. So they're gearing up to release their self-titled LP. That's going to be coming out on Smart Punk Records. And they just released a video for their third single, Give Me Time. So the video is kind of like they're playing in a room. There's a cat clock going at the beginning and at the end. They're playing. The lead singer wakes up and goes and drives, and someone's filming or driving and everything. So, you know, the video is kind of neat. Just you see the band, you get acquainted with the band, I guess. And then the song, it's energetic, it's upbeat, it's catchy. There's parts that are just like so earwormy. There's melodic parts, there's all sorts of stuff. The lead singer, Narelle Green, has a great voice. I did like the song. There's a part near the end where she yells out the band's name, and that kind of ruined the song a little bit for me, because I was like, thank you, but anyway. But I liked the song overall. That was just kind of my one thing with
it. Like the band wearing their own band t-shirt on stage. Was it like that for you? It's just like, just profoundly uncool. Is that like why it rubbed you the wrong way?
I don't mind when bands wear their own merch, but when it's like, we know who you are, and then I'm just gonna, the song's almost over, but it's not quite over. It's not the end. It's not the beginning. It's like, it's not in the middle. It's kind of near the end. Maybe the timing of it was like what kind of grated me, because I was like getting into the song. It's like, this is cool. And then that kind of like broke me out of it a little bit, but song's still good. I'm looking forward to checking out the album when it comes out. What do you guys think of Stud Count?
I mean, it reminded me of something that would have come out in like, what, like, you know, like 2003, maybe. And I liked a lot of sort of pop punk stuff back then. And to be honest, like there were things about it that reminded me of my own band. I just find it interesting that I really do feel like that era of music, that like very late 90s, early aughts, like pop punk seems to be making like a very real resurgence. So yeah, I sort of like listened to a lot of that stuff back in the day, and I maybe don't necessarily need more of it, but I think it's cool that people are getting, you know, getting excited about that sound again and that look, right? Her look is like so from that era. I thought it was interesting. I'd like to hear more. This wasn't like my favorite song, but I felt like there was something there. I'd like to hear more from this band.
Allie, do you enjoy or do you get annoyed when you hear a band playing music like you all played back in the day? Are you like, oh, they're just ripping us off, or like the spirit's still there? What's your opinion?
No, I never think anyone's ripping me off, because I don't really know how many of the kids like now even know who my band was. Or you just mean like my era, like they're ripping off my era. No, I mean, no, it doesn't, nothing about it bothers me. I'm not always interested in it, because I really filled my cup with that kind of music during those years. I really filled my cup. I don't have like a thirst for that kind of music anymore, but I'm always happy to hear people like getting excited about playing and listening to the kind of music that was like my everything for years and years and years. So yeah, I have no problem with it. John, were you into this?
I thought it was all right. I thought some parts were real cool. I thought the rougher parts were real cool. But like with a lot of these kind of bands on like punk label, it starts to get rough. You're like, oh, we're getting into off territory. Yeah, you know, rip it in half, and they kind of ease back. And I never understand why bands. Well, I do understand. It's because bands that ease back tend to sell a lot more records than bands that are just straight up punk, which frustrates me to no end. But I thought this was cool. I think I would definitely go see them live. Mm-hmm. I would say I'm not totally blown away with. I wish more bands would let themselves go out of control, or at least sound like they're going out of control. And I feel that Stud Count gets to that precipice and then stops. You know, so I kind of think there's real potential there, but I think they could be crazier. I, though, will disagree with them more. I love it when bands say their own names, a la the Dwarves, a la KRS-One, a la, I'm trying to think, the Melvins, a la, well, actually, Melvins never said their name in a song. I don't know, whoever. I think it's cool. I enjoy when a band admits that they think they're cool and are faux cocky. And I see, here's the deal. I enjoy a band that is over the top cocky and full of themselves on stage, but are actually cool off stage, as opposed to the humble, nice, cool band on stage that are total dickbags off stage. So I enjoy, here's the thing. I'm pretty proud of some of the stuff that I've written. And I realize that music journalism isn't, you know, Hemingway or Melville, but I'm proud of The Oral History of Leftover Crack. I think it's a really good book, you know. And if someone says, John, what do you think of that book? I'm not going to say, well, you know, it's not for me. No, it's awesome. I know it's awesome. I've read lots of books. I know it's a really good one. And so whenever anyone says, well, it's not for me to decide if my art is good. Yeah, yes, it is for you. You are the first person to decide, because if you don't think it's awesome, why are you putting it out? That's the question. So I enjoy when a band beats their chest on stage and says, we're great, you know. It's what's off stage. Are they thinking about it? Are they cool? There's a way that you can be proud of your stuff and even be humorously cocky about it without being an actual dick. And I feel as though bands that say, well, it's not for me to decide, I feel as though maybe deep down they are maybe narcissists and they're worried about being outed about it. So that's why they play it that way, where I just enjoy when a band says, I mean, the Dwarves have the thing. What do they say? Not the world's greatest rock. What the hell do they say? Rock and roll legends, which rock legends, the Dwarves, which I love when the Dwarves talk about how great they are on stage. I like when bands say their own name, except Iron Maiden. For some reason, when Bruce Dickinson talking about how great Iron Maiden is, I just want to strangle him. Any other metal band, I'm like, that's cool. But Bruce Dickinson, I'm like, shut up, Bruce. I guess just because they're not, but he genuinely thinks he is. So I guess that's what it is.
Well, Em did say it also that she felt that the placement was awkward. So when I release my solo, when I release my solo record, I'm going to be sure to chant Halle Bullet, Halle Bullet, Halle Bullet right at the top.
Yes.
So that I know I'll have Em Moore on board.
Yes.
One of the most interesting things about what Halle just expressed is Ice Cube on his first record. The refrain of the first track is fuck you, Ice Cube. It's a crowd yelling fuck you, Ice Cube. Which everyone, when he was cutting that record, everyone in the studio said, you can't diss yourself on your own record. And Ice Cube was like, you don't get it, you know? So it is kind of cool. You can do the opposite of having people insult you on your own record, which is another way to do it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Taking notes for my new solo record.
Well, at any rate, let's play a song, come back and rap. Listen, Emory, would you check out a Halle Bullet solo record? Emory, what do you think a Halle Bullet solo record would be like? Would it be pop punk? Would it be metal? Would it be like folk? Would it be like outsider music? Would it be jazz? Would it be a jazz odyssey? What do you think a Halle Bullet solo record would be, Emore?
It would be so funny because Halle, you're like, oh, I don't like, you know, the screaming stuff. And then you put out like the brutalist album ever.
Amazing.
Just like the logo, you can't read it. And like, you know, the whole thing. That would
I could try to do that and it would still sound like pop punk. So this is what I've learned about myself, is that I'm just pop punk till death. And no matter what style, I can try to like stray from the genre and I'll be like, oh, this is really different from the other stuff I'm written. And then everyone will be like, this is great, Halle. It's like really good pop punk. I'm like, I am what I am. What can I do?
Pop Punk Till Death. Great title for your solo record.
Yes.
Great title. Let's play a track. You guys want to play Big Frida and Boyfriend? How about that? Let the listeners decide. Or do you guys want to play Stud Count? Or both?
Play both.
All right. This will be Big Frida and Boyfriend. And then Stud Count will come back and we will wrap this on up. Who took the bomb? And we're back, and that was Doki Doki at the beginning of the show. Then we played some stud, some Boyfriend and Big Frieda and Stud Count. Hallie Bullet, how do you feel about tonight's episode? How are you feeling? How are you feeling about the status of the world, the universe? Do we even exist, or are we just a manifestation of some entity that doesn't even know that it exists, but thinks that it exists?
No, I feel good about this episode. I've been super, super down about the Supreme Court because for so many reasons. I'm not even going to bring up politics in the last 1 minute of the podcast. But yeah, to just talk about music and remember what are the things that we love and that people are making great stuff and that there are other beautiful, creative, like-minded people like Doki Doki out there. It's very life-affirming. So thank you.
And more closing words to you. Rebuttal. Are you going to reverse Hallie Bullet's decision? Are you going to say no?
Rebut that this is a positive experience, Em.
The most negative thing I've ever done. No. it's so nice to just be around and, you know, really highlights the importance of community. So remember that. How you vote matters.
Hell yeah.